Hey, welcome back. This is Robert Fleming. I'm one of the partners in the Tucson, Arizona elder law firm of Fleming & Curdy PLC. My partner, Elizabeth Noble Rawlings Freeman, is here with me, and we are going to talk about elder law issues. Particularly, Elizabeth, I thought that today we might talk about powers of attorney and driving. I don't know if you saw it, but at the end of January, the Washington Post had a really nice article that said, you know, comes a time when maybe you want to authorize somebody to tell you when it's time for you to give up the right to drive, give up your car keys. And particularly that article quoted a man who decided that he was going to sign such a power of attorney when he turned 65. Did you see that article?
I did, Robert. And in fact, we actually have a provision in our healthcare power of attorney that deals with driving. And many of our clients, when they're reviewing the healthcare power of attorney, start a discussion with us about whether they're comfortable having those provisions included.
You know, I have the same experience as you. And one of the things that's striking is how universal the reaction is, yeah, this is really important. A lot of people really need someone to be able to tell them. Now, the second half of the sentence is often, but not me. I don't need it. I'll be the first to know when I can't drive anymore. But a pretty high percentage of my clients, at least, execute the power of attorney with those driving powers in there. Is that your experience as well?
You know, Robert, it is. And as I think a little bit about the conversation, there are frequently questions about whether or not a healthcare agent can take away somebody's keys because they say, well, my car is my property. Well, are you telling me, Elizabeth, that my healthcare agent has control over my property? And I say, no, no. The purpose to having this provision in your healthcare power of attorney is actually to help engage in conversation, start a conversation with you and possibly the other person who would be involved, which could be your agent under your financial power of attorney or your trustee for that matter, about whether or not you're really prepared to continue behind the wheel. And I explained that your healthcare agent doesn't have control over your property, but that by signing a document that has driving provisions in it, that may suggest your healthcare agent can take away your keys, it's a great way for somebody to actually begin a very difficult conversation. And so I try and get them to focus less on the legal component and more on the practical component.
I think that's exactly right. The practical legal reality is that if my wife, who has been given this power on my healthcare power of attorney, tries to take away my car keys and I don't approve, or I really object, I can revoke the power of attorney. I can take away her power to take away my keys. But in the meantime, I've given her a document that allows her to kind of wave it in my face a little bit and say, hey, remember back in 2023 when you signed this document, then you thought I would be a good judge of when you needed to give up driving. And I think that time has arrived. It might not be 100% effective, but it really increases the likelihood that we're going to be able to talk through it and come up with a workable solution. I noticed that the fellow who was interviewed for the Washington Post article actually is a bit of an expert in the area. He has written an article in which he calculated that 61% of older adults with cognitive impairment still drive. And this sort of puzzled me. 36% of their caregivers think they need to stop driving. So I don't know what it is about caregivers that they aren't ready to step up and say, hey, you have cognitive impairment. It's time to find somebody else to do the driving for you. That seems to me like a pretty big gap in the numbers.
I think that's a great point, Robert. And one of the things that I think about when I consider what we're talking today about is, what is cognitive impairment? Where are you driving? Is all driving the same? You know, there are all these different iterations we can get into. I think the bottom line is, are you able to safely operate a motor vehicle? And when we say safely, we're not just talking about your safety. We're talking about the other people on the road. And as you and I both know, we've seen college students and out-of-towners. Tucson is a place that we have a lot of new drivers and other drivers on the road that we wouldn't normally in springtime. you can't always anticipate what they will do. So I tell people, listen, this isn't just about your ability to be safe and keep yourself safe in the car. It's actually about your ability to be a defensive driver. So as we start talking through the provisions and people say, well, diminished capacity, what does that mean? The fact is I only take right turns when I go to Walgreens. You know, these are all the different elements of the conversation. And I say the bottom line has to do with not just your safety, but your ability to react behind the wheel to other drivers who might be unsafe.
And you might be unsafe for them as well. So it really is a big issue. The thing about this Washington Post article that really struck me, though, is that the people who were interviewed and the author all assumed that you don't really need to do this until you're age 65. And I thought that was just nonsense. The guy who is being interviewed is 61. His wife is 59. They both say, when I turn 65, I'm going to sign this power of attorney. Oh, so if you have some cognitive decline or some physical disability that makes you an unsafe driver between now and then, you don't need that power? We think in our office that 45-year-olds, 35-year-olds ought to be signing this kind of an advance directive. It gives you really, it's not taking away your power. It gives you the power to identify the person who you think you trust to decide when you can't drive safely any longer.
And to really engage in the conversation. So I think it is fair, Robert, to say that that healthcare agent can be a decision maker, but ultimately it needs to be an engagement and a conversation with the principal, the person who signed the document.
And far more important for most of our clients is what kind of alternatives they have. What sort of transportation choices are available to somebody who no longer drives? Is there a family member who can squire you around? Can you use Uber and Lyft? Can you use public transportation? Do you live in a community that has available public transportation? Can somebody set up an automatic system for you to easily get to an Uber or Lyft ride so that you don't need the use of your vehicle as much? You know, we have such a cultural attachment to our vehicles. It's a real problem. And family members who are concerned really need to have alternatives in mind. But I think everybody should be signing this driving power of attorney, whether it's, as we do, included in your healthcare power of attorney or as a separate document.
I totally agree, Robert. And I'm 40 years old and I've got it in my healthcare power of attorney. And for those of you who are listening today and thinking, oh, darn, you know, the conversation about driving, my driving, my parents driving, my spouse's driving, you know, this is a tender topic. And then you start scratching your head and you're thinking, well, I don't know how the Uber or Lyft is going to find their way down this dirt road and get to the right address. And well, these are all the kinds of things that you need to be thinking about, talking about, considering, budgeting for as you age. And maybe, Robert, on another conversation, we can address what that means as far as lifestyle and location and where you're living. Because I think that the driving conversation is far more difficult for those people who cannot walk to the grocery store, who can't walk to the pharmacy, who are not able to walk to a movie theater. It's much, much more difficult.
Absolutely right. And we will save that for another day. You've all been listening to Elizabeth Noble Rawlings Freeman and me, Robert Fleming, talking about elder law issues. We're the partners in the Tucson, Arizona elder law firm of Fleming and Curdy PLC. We do this every week, and we'd love it if you would join us next week as well. Thanks. Talk to you then.